Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Telling you, bro. What's been happening, bro?
Not too much.
Still hitting no more Peggy O's.
Hey everybody, welcome back to this episode of the Riff Raff. Thanks for tuning in as always. It's a hot, I don't know, it's almost August now. Almost finished this tour. It's been going on forever, but it's been a lot of fun. And I'm finishing this episode at a beautiful place called the Rosewood Mansion in Dallas, which is, wow, what a nice spot. Let's see, t-shirts, they're all gone. Thank you for buying a t-shirt, those of you that bought one and supporting this. I may do some again at some point, I'm not sure. If you, you're just tuning in, man, there's a lot of episodes out there. I'm almost up to 30. It almost took me 2.5 years to do this, but let's get to today's guest.
See what kind of song it takes to keep you out on the floor, Lord, to make my whole world shake. I can't stop but getting off like a rocket. You're making my eyeballs bleed. I'm gonna hang around, cause you're gonna come around to me. I've been sitting at the bar running up a big fat.
All right, my guest today is Mr. Johnny Neal. Johnny Neal, one of the most brilliant musicians I ever had the pleasure to work with. Known him for well over 20 years. He's a friend, musical mentor. I don't even know how you would describe Johnny. He is, let's see, maybe take Leon Russell and morph him with part of Ray Charles, and then maybe inject some Thelonious Monk DNA, and maybe take Art Tatum's left hand and Jaco Pastorius's bass playing. I don't know. Anyway, he's badass in every sense of the word. Johnny's best known for being a member of the Allman Brothers Band. He was recruited by Dickie Betts and then brought in by Greg Allman. Tells you what a badass he is. He's also a great singer, songwriter, harmonica player, producer. I've worked on many, many projects with Johnny. We were in a band called the Grease Factor together. He's been on 3 of my 4 solo records, played a huge part on that. Johnny's unique in the sense that he's been blind since birth. I think the story is when you were a premature baby in the 50s, they used to put pure oxygen into the little baby crib bubble thing, and that's what happened to his eyes. And we'll talk about that, how it's been part of his musical makeup. I mean, maybe actually enhance some things. He's got ridiculously great ears. You're listening to a track from his record called Late Night Breakfast. He's got all kinds of great music. I had the pleasure of working on this with him. Check out his music, man. Anyway, enough yapping. I went to Nashville February, I think it was. Go over to Johnny's studio, sit down and do this. And we had a great time, as you'll hear. Piano maybe was a little out of tune, Johnny, but that's okay. My guitar was too. Love you anyway. Hope you guys will enjoy this. Here we go.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be good.
Remember this? What key was that in?
A.
How's it start? Just guitar?
Just you. One.
What?
Go ahead. Two. A one. Two. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, Johnny. Well, tuning is optional. It's got that natural chorusing.
Of course it, it does, doesn't it?
Like, yeah, like, I haven't played that song in like 15 years, Johnny.
That's why I didn't remember it.
So, well, hey, I am sitting here in Nashville, or in the whereabouts of Nashville, Tennessee, with man, I can truly say this, one of my soulmates and old friends, Johnny Neal.
Hey, baby.
Johnny Neal.
I like that soulmate stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
We've been clicking together a long time, man. Yeah. So I've been really wanting to have you on here for a while.
Well, I appreciate you doing that, you know, because I've been wanting to be on here about as long as you want me to be on here.
Come on, now. Have you ever actually heard an episode? You listen to this
one. No. Now you keep telling me about it, but I'm not good at that. You know, I'm a... what can I say? I ain't going to lie to you now, you know.
Well, I'll have, you know, I've got like the background info and all the stats and stuff on you. And I'm sure a lot of people listening to this know who you are already. But, you know, man, there's several layers of your story I can go to.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, hopefully we can get through a lot of stuff. But, man, I want to just say briefly how I met you. It was in the early 90s, and I had a guitar student. Shout out to this guy, Carl Donahue. And he was from Australia, and he was a huge Allman Brothers fan. And I don't know if you remember this, Johnny. He actually drove my crappy car up from Atlanta and drove it up to Nashville and went to some like state fair or something. And you happened to be there, Tennessee State Fair. And he walked up to you and said, "Are you Johnny Neal?" And you said, "Yep." "You can come over to the house and hang later." So he met you, like, and he just couldn't believe it because he was a huge Allman Brothers fan. And a couple weeks later, I end up in Nashville and he introduced me to you. And I was so nervous and green, man, and you gave me advice I'll never forget. You said, "Well, as long as you play a little C and W, you'd be okay." Yeah, I don't know if you remember that.
I remember the funny part was I played the Bluebird the night you came.
Wow, you got a good memory.
Yeah,
man.
And Jack Pearson was playing, and we were just jamming crazy, and that was... welcome to Nashville.
That was Halloween or something. Yeah,
it was
Jack.
Like,
yeah, I remember Jack. He pulled out a slide and starts playing like Sonny Stitt with a slide. And,
I know, exactly.
And I said, "Man, that's a great tone, you know, out of that Yamaha solid state amp." And, "Well, I was going to get a Mesa Boogie, but that's pretty good." I said, "Man, that's a pretty amazing." I thought, "Man, I must have come to the wrong town if everybody sounds like this, you know." But luckily, you know, there's not.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll get into all that, man. And not long after that, I went to your house. I remember going to your house once, and you said, "Come downstairs, let's listen to some music." I brought over a tape to show you. That's how long it was. And it was. I remember you saying, "Just come downstairs." And I almost busted my ass falling over because it was pitch black.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that was the world of Johnny Neal. You know,
slipping in the darkness.
For me, personally, I've been working with you, getting to hook up with you. It was a major, it was a game changer for me, man. That was
I appreciate that.
Game changing moment. Like, you know, you learn all this stuff at school and you play with people and stuff, but then to work with somebody, it was a good gig especially at the time, man. Like tell me the guitar players that were in your band. You had Brent Mason, Jack Pearson.
Yeah, and then Pat Bergerson.
And then I came in.
And then you came in, right? Yeah. And and we got shamed. Yes, well, we did.
Well, you gave me the break to do it, man. That was, still some of my funnest musical moments, man, playing, you know?
Well, you know, the thing is, I don't mind knowing what I'm doing, but not too much, you know? I like to keep that sort of, I don't know, you know, it's like an improvisation, but it's even looser than that in your head. You know, I just kind of, here I go, and then I go into some zone. And sometimes, like, I'll be making up lyrics on stage, and I thank God we recorded it because I don't remember what I said. Like, 2 minutes later.
Stream of consciousness.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Good God. After all these years.
Yeah.
it's like, woo.
But yeah, that's one of the things I learned from you, Johnny, was watching you, the spontaneity, how you would always give me shit in the studio if I tried to do something more than twice. You know, all the session things you got me on, and I can also say you're the only guest so far, man. You've been on every one of my solo records except for the latest one, which is just trio. But man, you played a huge part on all my shit. You know, like I, it was like the glue, man, for me.
Well, that's the B3, man. You know, that's what it is.
Yeah, man.
You know, super glue.
Super glue.
Yeah. Remember that guy said, you were in a session one time, the guy said, man, I love the way you play that B-53. I was like, I'll never forget that. I didn't know what to say. Oh, that's a bomb, baby. I was like, what did he just say? And I laughed. I shouldn't have laughed.
Wasn't that a bomber? Yeah,
that's right. He's like, yeah, that's a B-52, but still, I'm one up on it.
But anyway, that was some of the history. And then we played together in a short-lived footnote in jam band history called The Grease Factor.
Yeah, we stole that name from your first
second
solo
record.
Second one? Yeah.
Yeah, it was Jeff Sipe and Counting Butu and Derek Jones and Neil Fountain for a while on bass and you, Johnny.
Yeah.
One day the Count and Butu percussionist couldn't make it. And you said, I say we just discount this band. You remember that?
Yeah.
Do it without count. Let's just discount it.
But, well, that, you know, the thing was we never had any songs. And then the more we played, the more we learned, and that mm-hmm. made it not as cool. You know, we didn't have any songs ever. And then when we got to playing, maybe by 6-8 months or something, you know, then it was while we were jamming.
Right.
Because then we liked what we did, so let's do that again. Well, that wasn't what initially we were doing. You know, it was right. Like, I remember the first gig up in Asheville, it was all snowy and stuff. And we played the gig. And
Derek Trucks was there with his whole
yes,
band.
Yes, he was. They were sitting in the audience. And
they were like the only people there. But that's yeah, right.
Well, with an audience. Hey, you know, and then so Calc says, man, where y'all get them charts at? I said, they ain't no charts. It's just the way it come out. And he didn't believe it until about the third gig. And then he realized we were making it up. And I think that's probably musically the most fun, because we would just go places and I didn't even change keys. And all of a sudden, Jeff's like, want to go to Cuba, and we'd go over there with him.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He would go over there in a heartbeat. Any counterpoint that anybody did, that's it. You know, all of a sudden we'd be in 3-4 somewhere, you know? And I thought that was
really
amazing.
We really had to hang on. We were actually doing pretty good, man. We were getting on some good little festivals and things, you know. And
yes, we were.
It was just kind of too much to keep it together, you know, with the demographics and everybody living different places.
But, yeah.
You know, it was fun. I got to say on the record, I'm not crazy about that.
The stuff we used. Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
I think
we had
were
some
better shows, but
well,
it was,
there was. But it, by the time we looked through what we had, I bet 60 shows recorded.
And they exist somewhere.
Yeah, I got them.
Oh, you have them.
I think I got them. Okay. Yeah, right over there in the thing.
Now that mixing console out there, right when you walk in the door, is that the same console was on the road?
Yeah,
it looks
that's what we used.
Familiar.
Yeah, it's a pulpit, man.
Yeah, it's
the pulpit. I say.
A totem pole.
Yeah, it was. It's that's it right there. I kept it.
Boy, that thing has seen some miles.
Whew. Yeah, right after we had that made, guess what? Laptop came out. Just. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, there you go, exactly. Neely. Well, how's your timing on that one? You know, like, okay, we got it.
the low try.
You know, there's a lot of stuff I don't really know about you. As long as I've known you, which is over 20 years, and all the stuff we've done together. But, you know, why don't you tell me a little bit? You're from Delaware, right?
Originally. Yeah,
Delaware.
Newcastle, Wilmington, right, that vicinity. And, you know, I was a wild thing. My brother had a band, and then I kind of got in there with it, but I had a record deal when I was 12 years old and didn't know nothing about it, didn't know what I was doing. But I fell into it pretty good. And so that's pretty much, you know, how I really started playing music. But I learned music, how to play piano by doing this. You go up the black keys.
Yeah.
So I didn't play in C for probably 3 or 4 years. I'd be like B natural and F sharp. Yeah, I love it. All guitar players hated me. What you doing? You know, because then I started doing E flat. Well, see, those F sharp and such, they're easy to sing in. They're easy to sing in for some reason. I think Stevie Wonder said that once, and I checked it out, but he was right. But I don't, you know, it was just funny. You know, back in, you know, when I was 12, you know, I didn't know the difference.
Yeah.
I just fell upon that little thing, that thing. And then I didn't play, like I said, probably 3 or 4 years until I played on the white keys.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. I couldn't. Yeah. I don't like that.
Yeah,
but I got used to it. You know, but it's like, that's how I learned how to play.
Wow. I didn't know that.
You know, and listening to other people, once I got it, it was like, oh, let me. And then in blind school, boy, they all played good. Jeez, my knees. They had piano players and either tuned them or played them. So that was the big thing, you know, in blind school. They were good, too. They had a heck of a jazz band down
really?
There. Yeah, they were, we were like 15 years old, and they were just kicking.
Was there a particular teacher that you remember? Like one person?
Mr. Clayton.
Okay.
Yeah, he was the dude. Bob Woogie, he used to say, you better get it right, Bob Woogie. I said, what, Bob Woogie? I love
Bob
that.
Woogie,
yeah, Bob Woogie. But he was excellent. Now, they had some good players. I mean, you know.
See, I think everybody's had a Mr. Clayton in their life. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
At some point, it's a big thing. Like, no matter who you talk to, if they're not a trained musician, there's somebody along the way that said, hey, you know what? You do this. Don't do that, you know?
Oh, yeah. The thing that... that he told me, I used to play octaves like in here all the time, the bass.
Yeah.
He said, lay off them octaves, man. That sounds corny. So then I played fifths. Sorry about the tuning. I played fifths, and it just widened my whole. And then I realized that voicings are really the secret of a music. Like the whole chord thing is really cool. You know, it's like guys like Robin Ford who play the chord stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I just love that. So, I mean, you can just move one finger, your whole life changes, you know?
Okay, like, give me an example.
Well, like, like that, George Sherry used to, the octave thing, and you know, it's like that, I got cooked on that, this, you know, like that, but then there's this in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, but, you know, if I ever want to get my butt kicked, I just put on some Oscar Peterson and some Art Tatum, and I realize, you know, you better calm down, son. it's like, I love that, though.
Yeah, you know, guitar does that. Yeah, that kind of weird
octave
thing.
Yeah. I love that.
The piano is so much more dense, man, with the harmony. It's like so much
more. Well, it's you know, you got more A notes than I got.
Yeah, well.
I mean, they're the same thing.
Boy, it's a good thing I'm not interviewing Keith Jarrett. Today would have left by now. Shit's so out of tune.
No, it's good, man. Why?
Anyway, no, John, I'm just joking. But,
well, that's okay. I realize what the deal is.
I'm just joking. I just wanted to use that little joke in there. I remember seeing some old records over at your house with, you know, you and Randy Coleman, who's a friend, and was that the last word, or was that just
that was just the Johnny Neal band that's, you know, up on the East Coast, you know. Mm-hmm. And then we did a lot of stuff up in New England, you know. Believe it or not, we did a lot of stuff in Maine. I don't know what happened. I never got to New York. Yeah. I never got to
you
New
just
York.
Kept going further north.
Yeah,
but skip over New York.
Yeah, the last word came about when I moved to Nashville, and I think I had, you know, it's kind of funny about that time period with all the different stuff I was doing. I can't really say I know the timeline the way I should, but there was the last word, and then I was working with Dickie Betts.
Now, when you moved to Nashville, did you already have the Allman Brothers gig?
No.
Okay, wow, all right.
Nuh-uh.
So that all came after you.
I think he best heard me playing slide on the keyboard.
Yes.
And he.
I wish you had your thing set up, because yeah. I wanted to talk about that. Johnny had a patch on his, last time I saw you using that old Insonic thing.
Yeah.
Patch set up that sounded like the baddest ass slide guitar player. Really
yeah.
hip, you know.
Aww. You know, well, it was good.
That's how the whole Allman Brothers thing came mm-hmm. about?
Yeah.
You faking a slide guitar?
Yeah.
It's so ironic that it's actually the Allman Brothers, too. You were playing a fake slide guitar.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. But then I sang. But, you know, the funny thing was, I really got to realize that when me and Dickie would play unison lines, I thought I was doing it right, and then I realized, well, you know, you're not doing it right, because you got to do what he does, actually bend mm-hmm. it the way, they bend it up, the string, you know how you guitar players, you bend the same thing, you pick it up, and pick it down, and that was, I had to pay attention to that, so I made it not quite as much fun,
right?
Because I was just playing by myself, but then I got into it, and yeah, that was good. Dickie had a style that he was very gracious, you know, when we started out, and still is. But I'm just saying, like, that was really, I never paid attention. I didn't think it was going to be that intense, you know?
Right.
Because, you know, I just blow through it most of the time, and I couldn't do that with him. You know, and I was glad, though. I was glad, you know, because it taught me a lot of stuff. Yeah. Woo!
Dickie, then he turned you on to Greg Allman, and turned Greg on to you, and
yeah, it was yeah. And I had known the Tollers, you know, Danny Toller, Frankie Toller, through Dickie. See, and they were with Dickie before they were with Greg. So mm-hmm. was I. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of like history repeating itself, I guess. But, you know, then I remember I was in Seattle, and Dickie just, he wanted to go home. He didn't like the way things were going. And so I flew from Seattle all the way to Sarasota, and then the next day I played with Greg.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was like, whew, that was a long flight, man. But so then I played with Greg, and then that went into, you know, the Allman Brothers reunion. And
the record was called Reunion, right?
No, that was just a tour.
Okay.
The record was called Seven Turns we got
it's
into.
It's
all
that. Standing up on
yeah,
so
I think.
Some, yeah.
I think
so
that's
I've
it.
Been told.
That was cool, and then you know we you know things happened, and then I went off, and then that's when the last word came in.
Okay.
After that, and because I remember asking Warren Haynes, I need a slide player. I said, he's like, you got to call Jack Pearson. See, and I forgot about Jack. You know, I don't know what happened. There was a little like time span where I'm not sure what happened first. Everything was happening fast, you know.
Well, let's go back to Almonds. Is it true, you don't have to talk about this anymore, but I'm going to ask you, because I think you told me this one time, that Dickie got really pissed off at you because you reharmonized Jessica?
Yeah, that, and
so that actually
yeah, that happened. But and then we got into a closet. And
oh, yeah, you got in a fight.
But,
kind of.
But it was, well, it sounds worse than it is, but, yeah. You know, I just... I just like to try stuff. I think I thought the Allman Brothers jammed more than they did. So I was right, I'm going on the edge, right. I'm going after, which is, you know, what I thought. And then when I realized that wasn't true, it took me a little while to kind of regroup. I was like, oh, really? Oh, shit. You know, yeah. I mean, it's not a bad thing. I just, right. You know, I think another thing he didn't like was I would do a solo, then I'd have the crowd sing after me. He says, this ain't no Cab Calloway show.
You get the house on everything,
I said,
too.
Okay, I got you, Lou.
You remember we went to the Beacon that time backstage and you sat in? You sat in so many times, but Warren got you on stage to sit. We were up there with the Grease Factor and you sat in with Allman Brothers, man. That was killer.
Yeah, I think I remember that. Yeah, I remember that was, being up there with you guys, but I guess I sat in, but I can't swear to you, Shane. I'm not
I remember because you had a stain on your shirt, and you were so concerned with it. Well, I wasn't prepared to sit in. And when you just stood up and, like, raised your arms up, you got house, everybody was clapping, you had the stain on your shirt. It's funny.
Yeah, then why would a blind guy worry about a stain?
So I'm curious, how would you reharmonize Jessica? I don't know much about Allman Brothers.
Oh.
What is it?
I would go do that part, but then I'd yeah, so I would do that thing. Then he says, I don't know what to play.
Now, why would he get pissed?
Well, cause, I know, because me and you think different. Well, yes, it's like, but see, so I don't know what to play. I said, well, then don't play. That wasn't a good idea, Johnny. Not a good idea at all, pal. So, you know, it's like, whew.
Oh, man.
But, you know, that whole, I think the thing I really liked about the whole thing was the two drummers. That was like, whew.
Yeah.
Man, and, you know, I just see J-Mo on this cruise, Southern Rock cruise that we did. Man, I tell you, that dude, he is like the Elvin Jones of Southern Rock, man.
Yeah,
you know, he's
yeah,
got
yeah.
The, he's got the, you know, the flutter. Like, you know, they had the one solid cat, and then... And here you hear this like, I said, what the hell was that? You know, it's a J-Mo over there putting rolls in and just making all these cool noises. And I just thought, man, that is a cool place to be. I remember when the jam session one time in Buckhead, somewhere down in Atlanta. He said, come on, we're going to go. to this jam. We got like me and I think it was Paul Jackson and J-Mo. We were the rhythm section. Then they had five horn players. Well, I thought, oh man, this here we go. You know how they can get Dixieland or nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know. We were way out there. I'm just going to tell you. We was in some kind of land, and I must have hit on something. Next thing I know, there's five horn players. All in unison.
They're jumping on your line.
I went, damn. I like this. Now off we went, and then they come up with another thing. They nail it. I was like, Jesus. I thought this was like a jam session. I mean, it was, but it was intense. Yeah. It was really cool.
Well, you're a really rhythmic player. I mean, you have all this harmonic shit. It's beautiful, man. I've heard you do things that are not supposed to work. You know, like I've heard you do solo piano things and sing and do the same tune like Society Hill.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I heard you come out of that song, and I'm thinking, how's he going to resolve? Damn, how do you do that? That's not supposed to work. Wow, it just did. You know, so I learned so much, man, from listening to you. And also your rhythmic thing is... Your rhythmic thing and your bass lines, man, your left hand. I remember one time you did a gig. It was three keyboard players. It was you, Joe Wooten, and Reese Wine, and maybe somebody else. And, man, you played this bass line shit. It just killed everybody, man. Uh-huh. Just the left hand was... I was sitting in the audience with a couple of great bass players. I was like, wow, the bass line. It was like Jocko, you know? I mean, could you give me, like, some... I don't know. Give me an example of some stuff.
What had a lot to do with it was the setting had like a chorus and it had a snap, like bing, 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 bing. Hit it hard. So it'd be hard to do it on the piano, but you know, because that chorus and that wheel, you know, you can bend it. It probably won't transfer.
It won't transfer.
Do that. But I get what you're saying because it was a cool patch.
It was more than the patch, it was the lines.
Well,
stuff.
I know, but I mean, if I. I see that sounds funny, but that's what I would do. And you bend it down, I love the wheel.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people didn't like me using it, but Warren didn't like it, to be honest with you. He didn't like it. And I got to tell you a funny story about the wheel.
So we're talking about pitch wheel for those.
Yeah,
that
pitch
don't.
Wheel. I'm sorry. So I was working with Lonnie Mack. And he's a blues player, you know, pretty cool. Steve, well, he was really good, but he had a style. And so we were at Buddy Guy's place. And so I remember him saying he had a bottle of cognac. I said, "Hey, Lonnie, let me have some of that cognac." He goes, "I tell you what, you quit doing that bendy shit, and I'll give you the whole bottle."
Please stop, dude.
I mean, it was working, but it's like even one of the keyboard player, that was something I had to be careful with, because I think playing keyboards and you put a setting on, it's like character acting.
Yeah.
Then you put a horn. You can't play they can't play that on a horn setting. You know you.
Yeah.
So you know what I'm saying? So it was hard for me. Like, and I always wanted to try stuff, and I used to get in trouble a little bit. You know, cause with the wheel. The wheel was,
the wheel of fortune.
Wheel of disfortune.
I remember playing with you at the Sutler years and years ago in Nashville, and Lonnie Mack was there, and he came up to me and he said, you know, you're using that distortion box and you need to turn up louder, because if you use a distortion box, it kills your volume level, and it turns, it doesn't cut. I remember he told me that, and he
really?
Was right. Yeah, he was right.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember another time I played with you, and remember the guys from Bad Company showed up?
Oh, yeah, that was Third Leslie. Yeah.
Yeah. And the guitar player walked up, and I said, he goes, which one is the distortion? And I had this little tube screamer. I said, this one. He goes, turn it all the way up. And I handed him my guitar, and I said, are you Mick Ralphs? And he goes, Mick's going through a rather messy divorce at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny.
Well, we had some good times, man.
Yeah, that's somebody played sax on that gig, too.
Who knows, man? It was so long ago.
I know, but boy, it was good, whoever it was. Yeah. We had some good improvisational moments,
we
pal.
Had some amazing. I always, you know, I was on another podcast, podcast called Guitar Wank, which is really great, man. And I talked about you, and, you know, I told him about, you know, I said, man, this cat, like, that was the turning point, because it made me more confident as a player. Like, you gave me so many, you knew how to, felt good. Like, I was stepping into some big shoes, but you're like, man, you got your own thing. Just keep doing it. And I could have never been ready for some of these other gigs if I hadn't played with you, man.
Well,
I just learned about parts and everything.
Yeah, yeah, well, here's the funny thing. We were at the Sutler's Club. I used to play a lot. And you know, you were playing good, but you were like, I could hear you thinking about it. You know, and then one night, I'll never forget this. One night, it was like, bam, everything just fell right in. Right? I said, oh boy, there he goes. Yeah, he's cooking now. He's on a roll. And I said to my wife, Christy, I said, yeah, I don't think he's going to be around too much longer. Because once you hit that thing, I knew, oh man, somebody's going to pick up on this shit, man. He's cooking. And, and then next week you went with the Neville Brothers.
Yeah.
I said,
well,
he'll never leave. I said, no, he don't matter for you. I said, he's not, man. That one night, it's just all, I was proud to be a part of that, because it all just boom. And I went, okay.
Well, working with you, man, gave me a little clout in town. You know, it was like, oh, well, you, all right. Well, you can deal then if you're playing with Johnny, because you're, you know, respected. And that was a slamming band, man.
Oh, yeah. I've been murdered by love. By love. By love. I've been murdered by love.
Man, I want to talk a little bit about, I'm not trying to do this because it's my solo record, but there's a funny story. It's my solo record called Dirty Power, okay? Johnny was, as usual, such a big part of that. But it's a special record because Richie Hayward from Little Feet, who was a drummer, rest his soul, it was one of his last recording sessions. And, excuse me, we did it at Johnny's studio, and Richie and I actually flew together to Nashville and stayed at your place, and we recorded for two or three days.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a really special
time.
Oh,
yeah. I listened to that more than you. I mean, like every month or so, I got to pull that out. They have some good instrumentals. We wrote like, what, 7 tunes?
Something. I still have some other stuff like in the can I never finished, you know, that Richie, I remember him not crazy about, but maybe at some point.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, well, hey, we got just the fact that he'd say to my wife, what's Johnny think, man? I don't, you know what, he could have just done anything. I was so into that whole feel he had. I didn't give a shit what he did.
He was such a sweet guy.
He was, man. I'm telling you.
He could do that thing where it was in between like straight and you know, it's like almost like an old Earl Palmer New Orleans thing where it's like straight and swung yeah. at the same time, like that kind of.
But I like them old little Richard records. Had the band be doing this, like you, and the other big, and it would just create this like.
And the drummer's going tick, 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 tick.
Yeah, it's like I felt. How do you know which way to go? You know, like I got to lean on one side or the other.
Richie was a master. Like,
he was.
It was just an L.A. version of that, you know?
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
just a Topanga Canyon version of that, of an Earl Palmer thing, you know? But he was such a sweet dude. And there was a tune on there called Memphis, which I had you overdub. We were actually on the road, me and you.
In a van.
In a van. And I had my Pro Tools rig, and I said, Johnny, just improvise some shit on this. And you came up with all this, like, CB truck driver stuff, played harp on it. That was done in a moving minivan.
Oh yeah.
Talk about mobile recording. You know? That's
yeah, I had my bullet and you plugged it right into the thing. Yeah. Like, well, this ain't gonna work, you know, but it did.
I got you. I'm coming down, good buddy. 10-4 to the whatever it was.
10-4 to the Power 3.
Ask you a serious question. Do you think a person that, you know, is blind since birth like you has a sort of an advantage in the auditory department? Like, you think other senses sort of rise to the occasion with one being, you know, sort of shut off?
That's interesting. Well, I think the vision, if you're blind from the initial introduction to music, I think we don't have the visual distraction.
Right.
So that means, like, well, I don't care what's going on around me. I could be in a hurricane or something. But, you know, I mean, it's like, it's not really like you're gifted as much as, well, you, I mean, you're gifted, but, you know, some people say, well, you're blind. You got to hear twice as good as me. And I go, well, now, if you were blind for about 3 days, you'd be hearing a lot more because it's just like a muscle.
I see.
The memory, it's a muscle thing. Like, you know, if you listen to rain fall on the street, it sounds like a steak frying.
Wow.
Like those.
You start assimilate
things. Yeah, it's just you get stronger and better. I mean, you know, if you're talented, and thank God I happen to be sort of. But, you know, it's really not about, I think it's easier for me to focus without seeing. You know what I'm saying? Because
sure.
I'm just in the piano, I'm just in that place. Then I zone out, and I don't know what happens. But, you know, it's really cool.
Well, I've read that Edison actually Thomas Edison said he was deaf in one ear, and I think it was a train conductor hit him when he was a kid, and because he was a paper boy or something. But he said it was actually an advantage because it helped him to concentrate more being deaf.
Wow.
You know, I mean, Brian Wilson's deaf in one ear. Think about this. You make pet sounds and you can only ever hear it in mono.
Ooh, you know? But they have a lot of panning on that thing.
Yeah, some heavy panning.
but you know who else was deaf in one ear? He was blind in one eye and one of his ears was Owen Bradley.
Wow.
And the doctor said, what would you rather lose, your sight or your hearing? He said, my sight.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I said, well, I get that, but I'm blind already. But I can see why. Because if I couldn't hear, it would be devastating. I mean, because I wouldn't have my music.
Right, for you especially.
Which is, really important to me and would be to most people, you know. But, yeah, I couldn't stand it if I was deaf. That would not be cool.
Man, you know, one night we played in Arkansas with Grease Factor. I don't know if you remember this, but it really hit me, man. I was complaining. I wanted to get back to the hotel, and it was 4th of July. I'll never forget this story. Serious story. And it was 4th of July. We finished the gig, and I don't know. I just wanted to get back to the hotel, and you wanted to hang out, and you were hanging out with some friends, and we were on the same ride together or something. And I was walking you across this parking lot, and all these fireworks started. And I kept pulling you. Come on, Johnny. And you just stopped. He said, hold on. Nah, come on, man, let's go. He said, hold on. And you grabbed me and said, stop. Hey, man. And these fireworks are going off, all these colors everywhere. And you told me, man, what's that look like? What's that one? Listen to that. What's that look like? And I just stopped. I said, holy shit. You know what? You just take everything for granted, man. You know, and you hear things on a much, much deeper level. But, I guess, how do you explain what green looks like to somebody when there's no reference?
I mean, right, no, yeah. Well,
it's hard. Yeah. You know, it's so abstract.
And then it gets to a point where you kind of cheat a little bit. What's green? Grass. I mean, whatever. So I know that.
You know, but you've never really seen grass. No, so that's pretty deep. It. Yeah.
So I guess the color goes from your eye, your visual to your hands. You know, it's like Helen Keller when she put water together with what it was and learned how to say the word. That's the same idea. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
right.
Oh, heck, you know, that's pretty cool.
Now, because I kind of hear things sometimes in colors, you know, sometimes like tones and frequencies and things. I mean, even though you don't per se know what a red blah blah, do you kind of have that in your head sometimes? What are you thinking when you hit a chord? Is it a feel or is it a, you know?
I don't know how to. You know, I think when I don't know. I mean, I think I know what some. I know what some colors are. Because I think when I was real, real young, my retina was more together. So yeah. I could see, I know what shadows are, you know, and all that when I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Right.
So, but since I was premature and then they put the oxygen, you know, they didn't put it over my eyes, so it burned out the retina. So when the retina would come together,
yeah,
it would, however, it's be cohesive every once in a while. So I do have kind of an idea. I could see the sun for a while.
Wow.
But, I mean, it wasn't like I couldn't see. But
right.
I couldn't, like, utilize it. But so I think I hear stuff. Like, one of my favorite things is that, you know how when you fall asleep and you get that kind of light show going? Like if you rub your eyes or something and you see all the little...
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, that's what... I like that.
Wow.
You know, it's cool to me. Like, oh, hey, look at that. But I ain't looking. But it's
right.
Just something that happens, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, since I've been doing this podcast, I give a shout out to a really, really good friend of yours and a friend of mine, Doug Jones, Dougie Fresh.
Yeah.
If you're listening. He called me one day and unlike Johnny, correct me if I'm wrong, Johnny, but I think Doug lost his sight when he was 28 or something.
Yeah, glaucoma.
So that's a whole different deal, man. When you're, you've already been, you know, acclimated in the world for 28 years, and all of a sudden that whole thing is gone. But he told me, he's like, man, I listen to your podcast, man, and you know, you don't understand how great it is. You know, it's like having Guitar Player magazine, you know, for a blind person. You know, I can listen there and listen to stories and hear people. So it just made me think, you know, it's a cool thing. So anyway,
yeah, it is a cool thing. Keep it up.
Well, we'll see.
Well, you know, it's like, yeah, I think I would rather be blind all the time than have had it and lost it.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a little tougher because I don't know what I'm missing.
Right, right.
So it's a little bit more easier for me to deal with it. But, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
like,
right.
You know, like he did know it was coming. So it wasn't like, bam. It wasn't you know, it wasn't like, you know, you're right. Blind. But, but still, you know, it's a thing, you know. Everybody wants a piece of the pie. Cross your T's and dot them I's, just to try to make a good impression. Do whatever it takes to be first in line. You better cover your ass if you're so inclined, 'cause pain knows no discretion. With the wine and the laughter never stop. Do whatever it takes to stay on time. Oh, society here, they think that time stands still. So they bend the laws for their own cause. Is there moving for the kill? There ain't no right or wrong, long as you get the job done. It's cold up there on Society Hill.
Well, let's change topics here, because all the great guitar players you've had in your band, and also great guitar players you've worked with, man. I mean, just, you know, Jack and Brent Mason, and, you know, Pat and Warren Haynes. I mean, and you want to talk about anything like that? I mean, any stories that come to mind? Well, what do you like about certain guitar players? I know you don't like delay. I remember you never liked it if I used the delay.
Well, not a lot. Yeah, because it puts you in a different room than I'm in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, and you should be able to do that with your hands. But I tell you what about Brent Mason. Jesus, I got to tell you. We'd be doing a session, you know, it's one of these. And then in between the takes, man, we would go off into some stuff. I don't know what I was doing. He is out. I mean, he is so good. I mean, then they'd have to, hey, y'all, calm down out there. Oh, okay, man. All right. I mean, I can't even explain how he does that.
Yeah, he's great, man. He actually, I talked to him yesterday. He's going to be a guest on the podcast next week. But guess what? He got a recording session call. He had a day. He's like, come over, you know, Monday at 11. I said, okay. And I'm thinking, that's a week away, man. You might get a call for so. Sure enough. But I'll get him on here at some point. You know, we played together a few times. He's a great player.
I don't know what. I mean, I know the chords, but I don't know why he puts those chords together like that. Like, what is that?
Well, he's playing with finger picks too, so that's a whole.
Oh.
It adds a whole another level of deadliness to the stealth to the technique. You know, you're like, oh, all right, you got that too. It's like turbocharged.
He was in my first band I had down here.
Yeah,
it was me and him and Monty Wilson and Dave Pomeroy, which is pretty prominent. Now they're all...
Well, he's a president of the union now. Is Pomeroy still the president?
Yes, he is.
Let me grab my... So Brent and then and Jack, man, I watched you record that record called Coming At You Live.
Yeah.
I was there for those sessions. I was sitting right there because I remember I was when I was starting to hang out with you, and I watched Jack record that record. I think he did three nights at the Sutler, right?
Two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I remember that.
Night day. Somebody told me we're going to rock here tonight. Just a fool, low down and lazy. Now what in the world are you trying to do, boy? But I don't listen, no. That's just my style. But I might stay up on 999 laugh a little too long. Waste all my time hanging out around with the wrong crowd.
I'll be Jack's Jack and then. Pat Ferguson, man.
Yeah, I love
that dude,
yeah.
Man. Well, so I'm playing with him. We were doing something, and y'all were hearing him play harmonica.
Oh, I have.
Oh, my
believe
God.
Me.
Like two.
I've actually taken a few lessons from one harmonica. Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
I always tried to teach me that overblow thing.
Well, you played harmonica.
Well, I used to. I'm bluesy stuff, but that guy, man. He does the
well, he blows a chromatic with a straight harp, right?
Yeah, that's what I love. I'm just, yeah. How are you doing that? You know, like, I got the blues thing down, the cross harp, but... Yeah. Yeah, I had to play on a couple songs I wrote and with a friend of mine, and boy, they were nice jazzy, you know. Didn't be... Some deal.
Yeah.
He'd get that... I don't know how to put it, but he do all this stuff. I'm like, well, that's a straight harp. Man, you're supposed to be able to get that out of there.
You're going
to
break it. Quit doing that.
Yeah, you're going to bust that thing. You're going to bust it. You shouldn't.
Why don't you talk about Blue Floyd for a minute? Because that band Blue Floyd that you had with...
that was wild.
Alan Woody.
I was like the guy that initially... wanted to use, I forgot his name, Eddie from Black Rose. I can't remember his name, but he was supposed to do it, and I think they had a problem with it, so they called me. And I got to tell you, you know, I liked Pink Floyd, but it wasn't really my mainstay, if you know what I'm saying. But so when he took the Pink Floyd music and put blues in it, I was all over that. Oh,
right.
But I can mess this up, yeah.
Right, right.
Let me mess this up for you. And, you know, we do money and just do it like green onions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Well, here's the gas, and then we go. And we would do that in the instrumental part, but we straightened it out. That was funny. Y'all see me trying to learn them words when it wasn't in the off time. Whew, that was tough. But that was fun. I got to work with Matt Apps and Alan Woody was playing guitar.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know he was playing guitar.
Yeah, he was playing guitar, and then Barry Oakley Jr. Mm-hmm. playing bass. Mm-hmm. At Mark Ford.
Yeah.
And then you got into it.
Yeah, with Audley.
Yeah, with Audley.
Yeah, Jeff
and then
Peeble.
Alvin Youngblood. What's that guy's name? Alvin?
I don't know.
Youngblood. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was in it for a while. I had three guitar players up there for a minute.
Oh, yeah, man. It's like Blue Oyster Cult or something. Judas Priest.
Yeah, exactly. That was a little nerve-wracking for me, but that's okay. But, there was one guy. Oh, shit. Steve Peabar?
Jeff Peabar.
Jeff Peabar, yeah. He was in it for a while.
I remember that. Yeah. Well, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's because we used to call him the Interweaver. Because he would want to, let me interweave with your solo. I said, well, I'm doing a solo. Well, I'm going to interweave. I said, man, this ain't no sewing class.
Sewing class.
But he was great.
After the gig, there'd be like baskets everywhere. What happened here? Well, interweaving everything.
Yeah, that's what they tell blind people. What's they all, tell them. You learn how to make baskets.
What's all these carpets doing here? Well, you wove everything. Hey, what was I going to ask you? Remember we cut that stuff with Matt? We cut like three songs. We did like a Coltrane tune and... Me, you, and Matt Abs.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was we had that X2 thing where it was just me and him.
Yeah.
And then we bring guitar players in. I don't know what happened with that. It kind of lost momentum.
Yeah.
I did one with three with Jack, three with you, three with Steve Bishop, who since passed. I think that was his name.
You got to find that stuff, man.
I got it. I got it.
You got it?
I got it.
That was on 2-inch, probably,
yeah.
Right?
Well, that... as far as transferring, like, I have people promise me, I'll come over and help you transfer. And then a year later, I go, well, where'd that guy go?
They changed the bus route already. You're trying to transfer.
You know.
Get yourself a new job, get more pay. Jump down money, it's in gas. Take both fan stuff, grubby little bubbly, better get yourself a good stash. You make that.
Thanks for having me, son.
Of course.
I had a good time, I swear. It's good, man. I miss you. I wish you still was down here more, but I'm glad you're doing what you're doing.
Well, man, I miss you
anywhere
too.
Anywhere you're going to be, it's going to be some good music.
Thank you, Johnny. Well,
you're welcome.
Yeah, man. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, Shane. I love you so much, brother.
Likewise, bro. Well, I guess we solved all the world's problems, and hopefully my recorder recorded everything. So,
I have faith.
Yeah. We got to do some recording here, man. Your new studio.
I know, man.
Anybody interested in coming to Nashville and recording and getting a real great producer and great sound? Johnny Neal, Straight Up Sound, Nashville, Tennessee. You got a website and all that stuff.
Yes, I do. Two E's in Neal. Let me mention that, because that throws a lot of people off. You know, it's the way it is.
Yeah, man.
Well, thank you, son.
Thank you, Johnny.
All right. Okay, baby.
All right, if you're still listening, thanks for tuning in on this one and hanging in there. I hope you enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun putting this one together. Check out some of the show notes on my website. On this episode, I'll list a bunch of Johnny's stuff and links and things. As always, thanks for listening. If you haven't subscribed on iTunes or left me a little rating or nice comment, I'd appreciate if you do so. It's all I ask. Till then, take care.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.